Welcome to the Stinging Fly podcast. My name is Nicole Flattery. The Stinging Fly has been publishing new writers and new writing for the past 27 years. We take a particular interest in promoting the short story, and for this podcast, we ask writers from the latest issue of the Stinging Fly magazine to join us in the studio and discuss their work. On this month's episode, I'm joined by writer Rosa Makala. Hi, Rosa.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Would you mind reading a little bit from your great story for us?
Yes, of course. She's in the hall, the sprung wooden floor beneath her feet. Ahead, rows of girls, some in socks, some in slippers, some barefoot. The floor moves, gently rising and pressing beneath the weight of them, as the teacher leads them through the motions. Shine, yes, shining, up, step, step, push, windmill, fall, brush, 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 step, roll, and burst. Again, the teacher says. They follow along, the words punctuating the flow, reminding limbs where to go, feet where to step. Shoulder roll, breathe, and frame, thread the needle, frame, hand to chest, step, hand, step together, one, sway, right, step and left, lift up chin, head drop, sway, clasp, chin, sway. Clarissa is near the back. She's always near the back. There are politics to the placement of bodies in the rehearsal room, and Clarissa has never been more than two rows from the back. The teacher barks, and immediately they realign. They know this bit. Froggy leg, step, step, lean, turn, step, drop, two, three, reverse, breathe, breathing in, step and down. Moving through it, Clarissa considers the bodies ahead of her, those in the rows at the front, how they can fold themselves up and stretch out like plasticine. Those girls don't have what you have, her mother says. They're dull, you're earthy, unconventional. In my industry, she says, it does you good to stand out. They don't have your passion. Clarissa thinks a lot about passion. About this secret ingredient her mother has told her she has. If she has passion, the girls in the front of her have something else entirely. Perhaps an ingredient her mother has forgotten. Whatever it is, this unnameable thing, it is not invisible. When 30 girls go up on stage performing identical moves, each with their own precision and delicacy, your eye will still be drawn to one, maybe two of them. These girls and whatever they have will take the gestures and translate them into something beautiful, while everyone around them is stuck performing something pretty. Clarissa thinks maybe it is really these girls who have passion, and her mother is hoping by saying it enough, Clarissa will become one of them. What Clarissa does have is a nervous disposition and an unquenchable desire to appease her mother. She never asked to be a dancer, but it is something her mother feels is essential, even when they are running out of money and she shuts the bedroom door to have screaming phone calls with people. I can stop the classes, Clarissa suggested before. Don't be stupid, her mother said. I'd rather go grey and starve than have you give them up. So if her mother wants her to have passion, she'll keep looking for it. So far, it has gotten her two rows from the back and destined to play the part of any animals or foliage in the recitals, though she is hoping to be upgraded to a human role this term. After rehearsal in the changing rooms, the girls are undressing and discussing the new show. They will be performing a dance interpretation of Christina Rossetti's Goblin Market. The girls have been divided into maidens and goblins and the two lead roles of Laura and Lizzie. Clarissa is, of course, a goblin, but right now she is grateful that she is, if not human, at least humanoid. She can imagine a version where she was cast as a peach or a crabapple. Two front row girls have been cast as Lizzie and Laura. I can't believe it, the Laura says. I really can't believe it. Everyone else can. She has previously played Rapunzel in Rapunzel and the Little Red Hen in the Little Red Hen. Titular characters are well and truly in her repertoire. You've worked really hard, the Lizzie says. You deserve it. Yeah, a second row girl says, and Miss was really impressed with your breathwork and your flow. Yeah, your flow is amazing, the Lizzie says. You just had to be Laura. I'm just happy to be a maiden, another girl says. I hope we have costumes like the children in the Pied Piper, with all the ribbons. What about the goblins, someone asks. What'll they wear? Masks, the Lizzie says. They'll have to be in masks. None of the parents will want to know who's who with the goblins. Why, a girl asks. What do you mean? The Lizzie shrugs. Well, they're the rapists, aren't they? The maidens and goblins wait for her to go on. The Lizzie has four older sisters and has accepted her role as a deliverer of unfortunate truths. She had to explain abortion to the girls before the last show. How are they rapists? The Laura asks. Everyone else exhales in appreciation. Oh, come on, the Lizzie says. They want to steal the fruit, sweet, juicy fruit. It is not good for maidens to loiter in the glen. Everyone is still looking up at the Lizzie. The fruit is our virginity, she says. Obviously. Oh, a maiden says. I thought it was just about goblins, the Laura says. Well, it's layered. Every good piece has subtext. Right, another girl says, of course. I get it, someone else says. Clarissa is feeling less content with her role as a goblin now, and she looks around at the other unlucky girls. She tries to figure out what has distinguished her and the other from the maidens. It seems to her a pretty clear divide between those who have and have not started shaving their legs. Clarissa has been wondering how to solve the issue of the hairs poking out through her tights for some weeks now. But every time she attempts to bring it up with her mother, Clarissa clams up and has to rush to the bathroom and splash her face with cold water. As the girls are leaving the changing room, their dance teacher calls Clarissa aside. "I've just had a call from your mother," she says. "Something about work, and that your father will collect you, just to wait in the foyer." Clarissa blinks. "Are you sure?" she says. "Of course," the teacher says. "Come on, I'll bring you up, but I can only wait a short while. Get your things." Clarissa already has her things. She is holding her drawstring bag containing her leotard, tights, her socks, dance shoes, a notebook, a pencil, and an old apple that started to wrinkle from sitting at the bottom of the bag for over a week. If she had known today was going to be the day, she might have packed differently. She grips the strings of her bag but feels completely empty-handed.
Thank you, Rosa. So talk to me about this story. How did it come about?
I started writing it because, well, I was watching a video of Twyla Tharp speak about dancing. Mm-hmm. And she was like describing certain dance moves and like the phrases and the choreography. And she was just like using these random words. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about like, oh, what would it be like to write a story with like a dance in it? And like try to like not just like describe the physical movements, but like write the dance in like this way.
Yeah.
And also I'm kind of obsessed with like films about dance when they just like put the whole dance in it, you know?
So you've seen The Red Shoes.
I've seen The Red Shoes. I love The Red Shoes. And yeah, I was like, oh, what would that be like in a story? Mm-hmm. So then I started trying to write that. But then, yeah, I suppose like the character of Clarissa just kind of developed. Mm. And then her like father walked into the story and the dance kind of became like secondary. So yeah, that was like my instinct to like start it. And then it just kind of like unfurled in a very different way. But yeah.
Did it take you long? Did you feel from beginning to like?
Not really. Like I started writing it in October and then I submitted it to the magazine in November. And I'd done like some redrafting stuff after I submitted it as well that I was still kind of like working away a little bit. But it all kind of like came out quite fast. I was tricking myself, trying to make myself like write more at the time. And I was like trying to make writing feel really fun. So I was like, don't use your laptop, just like go sit somewhere nice and lovely and like write. And then I had bought like a nice notebook. Mm. So I just kind of wrote.
These are all the tricks.
Yeah. I'm learning all the tricks. Mm. So I had a new notebook and a new pen. And I was like, just make it fun. Make it fun. Like the stakes are really low. If you don't write a good story, that's just on you. So
I do find that working not with your laptop is a good idea.
Yeah.
It makes it feel less like business.
Exactly. I was like, this is a fun thing that you supposedly love doing. So
do it.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I just, I wrote it all out like long form over 2 days. So. Mm. And there was like a very kind of different ending initially and there was like more characters, but yeah, the kind of shape of it and the movement through it was pretty much the same from me writing it out that time.
And when did the father start coming into it as a more kind of serious influence?
Well, in the first draft, he came in like at that point and like arriving into the dance class, and I wanted it to be like, there's obviously a trope of like the absent father returning and then this child having this kind of like, oh, everything's going to be different and like, you know, now it's going to be like the way I always dreamed it would be. And I didn't want that for her. She is like more tuned in. So it's kind of almost like flipping that and being like, she already knows that he's going to disappoint her, or she has no expectation from him. And I think I almost tried to like make him less important in it. Like in the first draft, she like goes to the brother's house and the brother is like more involved, but it felt too like repeated. It was like she goes, her father lets her down, and then she goes to meet the brother, and then he lets her down in a similar way. Yeah, and I was like, oh, okay, it's probably not necessary. So I just kind of made it, I just focused in on the two of them then.
Mm-hmm. And it feels to me like kind of surreal in places. Was that intentional?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, I definitely like having stories where like it could kind of maybe be in a slightly uprooted world that's not like fully cemented in like a concrete present here and now, or you know. I think I was spending a lot of time on my own when I was writing this, and like I feel like all the things that I was like reading and writing were just like hovering around me as these like influences that feel very like present in it. So I was reading lots of, I don't know if I'm going to say her name, but Lyudmila Petrushevskaya. Do you know she's like a Russian writer?
No, I don't know.
She's really amazing. And her stories are also kind of like that, mm-hmm. of like, she writes a lot about like Russian kind of working class peasant people, but there's also like layers of kind of surreal elements in it as well. So I was definitely kind of like taking that in, I'd say. And then I was reading Talking to Women, you know, the Nell Dunn book?
Yeah.
And I was watching The Trial of Christine Keeler. So I had this like 1960s kind of London hovering around as well. But then with this influence of a kind of like Lyudmila Petrushevskaya, however you say her names, work is kind of almost fairy tale-esque as well. Bits of it, like they're dark, and I think that weird combination of all those influences, like I can see them in the story, even though it wasn't like conscious.
But
I think for me, when I'm like spending lots of time on my own and like kind of building up this like sort of platter of influences, then when I go to write, they just like are all there.
And talk to me about Talking to Women, because that is a great book.
I really loved it. And then there was like bits of it that kind of made me feel weird because there's kind of lots of homophobia in it. But
I haven't read it now in years. Remind me.
Not
of all of it.
No. There's just like, well, they're kind of saying like very progressive things in most of it. And then they're just like, oh my God, how could a woman ever be a lesbian? That's disgusting, you know? But then they're also like, people should be able to love whoever they want. They're like, but I could never be a lesbian. And you're like, oh, okay. but I love like the conversational, like candidness that all these women are just like talking about all these different, like lots about like love and relationships. And they're all so young. They're like, I think they're all like in their 20s, and then lots of them have children. They're like, oh, I've given up on marriage. And, you know, it's like...
Edna O'Brien is interviewed.
And I can't... Pauline Botti, I think, painter. Loads of women. But that was like a kind of, a little snapshot into this like very specific time, and their like friendships and the closeness between them. Mm.
And talk to me about in this story when they go to the pub, which is a really, I think you write that really well, like all the overlapping dialogue and the tension of that and the things that people are saying in the pub that are like flippant but also mean something. I really always enjoy those kind of scenes. She goes to the pub with her father.
I think I was thinking about there's something that's so like in my memory about being this age when you're like on the cusp of being not an adult, but more you're becoming aware of like the adult world. And I remember being so like tuned into what people were saying because I was like trying to scan for like words I didn't know or like hints and like glimpses into adulthood. And I think being in a pub as like a child, it's like kind of not your space, you know? And the character is so observant and very like sure of herself in lots of ways, but she's just kind of, taking everything in. And I suppose the glimpse of the conversation, I was like thinking about her building up her understanding of the world through these people and being out of her like comfort zone and being out of her like environment. And I think that's part of becoming an adult as well, is like pushing yourself, and she's just like picking up these glimpses of these people.
And her impressions of them. Something you do very skillfully is the father, is how people feel about the father without anyone stating kind of outright. So you get the impression, you know, when he walks in, you're like, not you again. And then she welcomes him, and you know, he's interested in lots of women there, or they're interested in him. And, you know, he's sort of a charismatic figure. And then as the story goes on, you realize he can't like hold any responsibility or whatever in his life. I felt for both her and him in some respects.
Loads of people have been like, oh, I hate him. Or, you know, and I'm like, I don't feel that way about him. I think sometimes the relationship between them, I think I was thinking of him as like a character of like what, of like a father, you know, maybe against, maybe not a conscious choice that he made to become a father and like a life that wasn't ready for her in it or something. And I think there's part of him that like wants, when he's like coming to meet her, I don't know if that's like an attempt to heal something or if it's just an idea in his head where he's like trying out what it would feel like to be the father for the day or something. But I don't feel like strong judgment towards him. I feel bad for him as well, you know? Because he's very incapable of, yeah, that responsibility and kind of putting aside whatever it is that he wants to do more than prioritizing Clarissa.
And it's not like his life itself is like particularly like worth, you know, remaining a bachelor for.
No.
We're seeing it's quite pathetic.
Yeah.
But you do manage within like kind of a few sentences, even when they're in the car, to like, he is very charismatic. And I'm always just curious about how you write that. Like, because people have like various degrees of charisma and stuff in real life, but it's extremely hard to get it on the page.
I guess it is in the relationships around him and the people who, and like his confidence in himself, like he has no kind of like immediately apparent shame. Like, you know, there's no apology. You know, it's like, haven't seen her in however many years. It's like, here I am, you know? And I think he wants her to be impressed by him as well, you know?
Yeah, I was getting that impression.
But yeah, I think it's how he interacts with the people around him and how he talks about himself. And yeah, he's like kind of constantly asking. He wants her to be so intrigued by him and he thinks he's this like mysterious figure, I think. And I think he likes that idea and she's just very suspicious and cautious, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It felt to me like, I can't think of, you know, a story it reminded me a little bit of was that John Cheever won the reunion.
Okay, I haven't read that story.
It's very good. So I think it's like a son and he goes with his father to all these different restaurants. The dad is getting drunker and drunker. More belligerent. It's very short. And it's just that kind of like childlike view of the absent adult that you see in like films and whatever.
Yeah.
Did you feel that when you were writing it or?
Yeah, definitely. And I was thinking as well, there's a Mavis Gallant story. I can't remember what it's called, but it's the son who's like estranged from his dad goes to see his dad who's like living somewhere in Europe. Mm-hmm. And he's like on his deathbed basically. And he's like the whole time, it's kind of flipped from like what I have with the father and Clarissa. Cause like the son is waiting the whole time for like an apology or like some explanation. And then it turns out in the end, the dad's like, oh, I only asked you to come cause like I knew you would, like none of your other siblings would. So it wasn't like anything particularly special. But I think that was kind of in the back of my head as well. This like, the like expectation between them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's hinted at that like Clarissa and her mother also have a difficult. Although Clarissa, it strikes me as like very agreeable. I like as you are at that age when you're just like, oh, I'll just go to the class and I guess I'll be down the back and I'll be a goblin. But you're not thinking really, we can talk a little bit about the end. But I feel, she has a, she is accepting. She's like my mother, she's not fighting anything. She's like my mother is this way.
Yeah.
But there is that kind of tension. And then there's a line where my mother's like, she wants to be an actress or she wants her to be an actress. Or.
I think the mother I had, like, I think both of the parents are kind of like, maybe ended up as parents without like deciding necessarily. Because I think Clarissa's mother has this like other life she wants to be living and is like, is very absent in her own way and is kind of like putting, like even the dancing is like her idea, like her wish for her daughter. I don't think she's like, she's obviously present and doing her best maybe a little bit more than the father in the story, but there's definitely like still a disconnect between them for sure.
Yeah. And the brother as well.
He
talks to on the phone.
Yeah, and I think I was interested in like the siblings having different experiences of a relationship with someone and how you can know the same person, but if you know them at a different time or after a different experience, then
you know a different
relationship.
Yeah. Something I really liked about the end, not to ruin the story, and I don't think I will be, but you build up this incredible sense of unease and dread, and then nothing happens. And then she kind of leaves. And I really love the last paragraph where she's kind of like, you. But nothing happened. And that, like, she's almost like drawing strength from that. And I understand that feeling of like, you're so frightened of something, then the worst kind of happens and like nothing has happened.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling that she has, like, you know, changed in some kind of way by the end of this.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. She's a different goblin.
Yeah, she is a different goblin. Yeah, I think it's like all those, like reading it as like an adult reader or me writing it as an adult writer, you're kind of aware of all the dangers and like threats to her that like she might not necessarily even be aware of.
Yeah.
And might not have like the language for or, and like there's a bit when she's on the phone to the brother and he's like, you're not hurt though, are you?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, no, because I'm imagining her as a child being like, well, I didn't like fall and cut my knee, you know? And I think when you're a child, you have a sense of things, but you know, especially, you can be like uncomfortable around adults and not really know why, you know? And I think she's definitely like moving through some kind of experience that is changed from by the end of it. And maybe it's a sense of like, oh, adults are just weird people, you know what I mean?
With their own kind of problems.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's kind of like some barrier between that world and her own is like breaking down a little bit, and she's maybe not so like naive or something.
Yeah, definitely. I just felt kind of like she was like a stronger person. Like
like
she would be able to go back to that dance class. And, you know,
push yourself to the front row.
The thing that you were saying in the beginning that her mother was saying, she might have a more unusual quality because she's kind of had an experience and discovered something about herself.
Yeah.
I love the description of the dad's apartment, by the way.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
Like, yeah, not a place I would want to live. But I feel like it's as well the thing where he probably doesn't even have any kind of feeling about it. He's like, this is where I live, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Sure, you can sleep on the armchair with the, I don't know, jumper pulled over you.
Yeah, I think what you were saying, a person like that derives like a lot of power from like not having any shame.
Mm, absolutely.
So when they have no shame, you have no shame around them either.
Yeah.
And like that is sort of where the charisma comes from.
Mm, yeah, absolutely.
I kind of was wondering what would happen if there was a sequel. They're so popular these days. If they saw each other again, you know, what would happen? Would it be different? Would they have changed? You write this child, like, because a child like point of view is so hard to write. Did you find it challenging? Were you even thinking? Because I think I've written maybe one thing from a child's point of view, and I was like, oh. Like the whole time, like I was very aware of it.
Yeah, I don't think I was. I think it just, I had a sense of this like character in this relationship and this world of her in the dance class. I thought as well, like when I thought I was going to be writing it like just about dance, I thought it would be like the relationship between all the girls and the changing room and them kind of like piecing the world together. So I wasn't, yeah, with like her perspective, I don't think I was like making conscious decisions of like, oh, this is how to do it from a child's perspective. And also, I think if that's too forced, you can like make the child seem kind of stupid or something, you know? Like
it's a real balance.
Yeah,
and it's like you also don't want it to be like that cutesy thing.
Absolutely.
Like the adults were saying this, but I knew what they meant.
Yeah,
it's like it's such a tightrope walk, I think.
And I think when you are like that like 11 or whatever, it's like you do have like an adult's vocabulary a lot of the time, you know. It's not like she's speaking in baby talk it's just her understanding of the world is kind of not fully formed, but she has like the adult words for a lot of it.
Have you read Light Years, the Elizabeth Jane Howard book?
Mm-mm, no.
It's the first book in a book of five, the Kazakh Chronicles, but it's about a family, an English family, and then it's interspersed with the children's point of view. And I've just never read such good children.
Yeah.
Where it's like, and it's a similar kind of thing, a father where you're like, what is he up to?
Yeah.
But you really, you get both the childishness and the adult qualities, which can exist at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you do something similar here.
Thank you.
I also think your dialogue is great. I was really hoping you were going to read out the scene about the goblins, and you did.
Yeah.
I was happy.
I love the goblins in it as well.
Do you like writing group scenes? Because the dialogue on the pub is very good.
Yeah, I think I do. I think my dialogue just kind of comes out. I suppose I like, you know, like everyone, I suppose, like listening to people talk and how they talk. And I feel like I normally chop off bits at the top and the end of the dialogue scenes when I write them, because I feel like I'm fumbling my way in. But once I get the people talking, it's just...
Yeah,
I think sometimes I'm just like trying to make myself laugh with what they're saying. You know what I mean? If I'm like writing it and I'm like, ha, 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 then I'm like, that must be good.
I get that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I hear it in my head from like lots of different people. So it's I don't find it hard to write that.
Great. And tell me, Rosa, so how did you start writing?
I think I started writing like properly, I suppose, after college. I did like some like playwriting bits in college and things like that. But
did you write plays?
Yeah, I wrote like short plays and then like monologues, and you know, I was like trying stuff out. But I never really like attached to the like identity of like trying to be a writer. I was just like doing it. And then the first short story that I wrote was actually also about dance class.
Oh. Have you been to dance class? Like,
I think you could kind of generously label it autofiction.
Yeah.
I had, like, when I finished college, I moved away to Berlin on, like, a kind of whim, because I was like, that's where cool people go. That's what has to be done now. Yeah. And I think I was
like, I have to.
Yeah,
I have to go.
The only option. I think it was, like, the first time that I was, like, spending time properly on my own.
So, like, especially, I think that time after college.
Yeah.
Where you, like, have gone from spending days and, like, nights, like, surrounded by your friends.
Yeah.
And it's suddenly quite jarring then when you're, like...
100%. And, like, I lived in one of those kind of houses in college where, like, people would just, like, knock on the door and call in. It was, like, I didn't ever have to go looking for people to hang out with because they were just, like, around all the time. And then I think also with that, like, period of your life, it's, like, I knew I wanted to go to college and I knew I wanted to finish college. And then after that, I was, like,
Yeah.
You know, so Berlin, that's what the cool people do. So, you know, I went there. It was not there very long, but I was... extremely lonely.
Yeah.
So I was like, how do I go meet people? And I accidentally ended up booking into what I thought was like a beginner's dance class. And it was open level dance class, which is, now I know, is where all professional dancers go to warm up and stretch their muscles or whatever. So I did like a 2-hour professional dance class as not even slightly
how
beginner
good were
dance.
The other people?
Oh, really good. Like like contortionists, you know?
God.
But I stayed for the whole thing because I was somehow more embarrassed about the idea about like walking across the room to leave than being there and humiliating myself. Mm-hmm. And I think like if this had happened like in Cork or something, I would have gone home and been like, guys, you won't believe what happened to me. I've just been in this dance class with all these professional people, blah, 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 blah. And I was just like sitting there with like all this feeling, and then I just wrote a story about it. So... I think it was like the combination of like being on my own and then also like having these feelings that I didn't know how to deal with on my own, maybe. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then like I write now for like various reasons and not related to that at all. But it was then I did it and I was like, oh, I love this. And I love doing it and the way it makes me spend time on my own in a way. And like I was always reading, like I was reading loads. And I think I was like reading short stories for the first time around this time. I was like always kind of like novels and stuff beforehand. So then it kind of felt like a manageable thing or something that I could fathom writing one of these.
Yeah, definitely. More than a novel.
Yeah.
And how else was Berlin? What else happened?
It was good, but I went and then I was like, wait, what am I doing here? I actually like living in a city where my friends are. And I made some friends and they were all Irish. And I was like, I could just be hanging out with Irish people in Ireland. But it was also fun, like lots of going out and going to galleries and going to professional dance classes that I couldn't keep up with.
It's such a jarring situation.
Yeah.
I did a Pilates class like 2 weeks ago where I realized everyone else in there was a Pilates teacher.
No. Yeah.
But it was the same. I was like, I actually can't leave.
No.
Like, because they all knew each other at the start. And I was like, oh, they're all friendly.
And the door is so very far away.
I was like, oh. And then they were all like complimenting each other. And I was like, I didn't know.
Yeah. Like, why didn't you tell me this was a club? A secret club.
Yeah, you're all pals. And then you're like slinking off.
Yeah.
So you worked on those stories, kind of. Did you work on your stories by yourself for a while before you started telling them out?
Yeah, like I started, I was writing myself, and then the like pandemic happened, and like I had studied theater beforehand, and I was like vaguely being like, oh, I guess I'll work in theater.
Yeah.
And then pandemic happened, and like theater didn't really seem to be like it was like a hard thing to understand operating in the way the world was at the time. And also I was getting the PUP, so I had all this money for the first time properly. And I was like,
I know people that talk about the PUP. Am I allowed to say that? It was the best days of their life. Anyway.
No, it was, but I like wasn't paying rent at the time because I had just kind of like ended up in a friend's house because we were both working in cafes.
Yeah.
And then we're like, oh, our cafes are both closing. I'll just come stay with you for like a couple of weeks while the world is a bit weird. So then I was like staying in her house, no rent, PUP, saving loads of money. And I was like, oh, what do I do with these thousands of euro I've never had before? And then I decided to do a creative writing master's because I was like, oh,
yeah,
cool. So it was just like all those combinations, like the writing the first story ever had happened in like October. And then by like the next September, I was like enrolled in the MA. So it all just kind of happened. I was never like, I'm going to set out and do this. And even when I was like doing the master's, I was like, I have all this money. This is a thing I'd like to do for a year while like we're all locked in our houses.
It was a good way to spend your time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I got like a lot out of it. And I just spent like that year afterwards writing loads and reading loads. And then I've, just been like working on stories since then. And yeah.
Tell me about the master's.
I find it very like beneficial, but like I was in such an early stage of writing.
Yeah.
It felt like a very like nurturing, supportive space to like be figuring out how to write. And
it was in UCC.
In UCC, yeah. And because I had like nothing else going on, I felt so committed to it. I felt so in it. And yeah, it was just like a really nice environment. And I made like other writing friends that I'd never like, I didn't really have people around me who in my friend group were like trying to be writers before, you know? So that was really exciting. And yeah, just being like able to read and write and be like, this is for a specific end goal, you know? Which is like helped me be really focused, I suppose.
Mm. And how did you find the workshop like process?
I liked it. Yeah. I think it's kind of amazing to be able to sit and like dedicate this time to be like, let's just talk about each other's stories and take each other like seriously and you know, learn from other people and like learn things about your own writing from how someone else sees it. And I think I definitely like, I'm sure everyone's the same, but like if I know someone else is going to read it, I like push the edits that little bit further, you know? So having that awareness is made me improve, I guess.
Did you complete many stories when you were there?
Like I wrote the like thing that you hand up at the end, the thesis or whatever, was like 20,000 words of, so I think it was like maybe like five or six stories. And then like when I finished that, I sent some of those out and some of those got published, you know, so it felt like a very productive year.
I was like, really did it?
Yeah.
Did you find when you were in the workshops that there were like a couple or one or two people that, you know, you felt like you really understood their work and they really understood your work? Did you?
Yeah. Like I definitely had people who I connected with and whose writing like spoke to me more than like other people in the group. And it was just nice to have people to like talk about it with kind of all the time. And some of them I'm like still in touch with. So,
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And tell me, what other stories you? I know you had a story published in The Pig's Back.
Mm-hmm.
And When you put all those stories together and you were kind of looking over them, did you feel like certain things were arising, like themes or?
Yeah, I guess like it's probably lots of stuff with like lots of like family relationships and then lots of like identity things and people like, I don't know, figuring out who they are and things like that. So yeah, I don't intend to write about specific things, but I'm sure it's the same for everyone. They just like can't help but pop up.
Yeah, and surprise you.
Yeah.
And did you feel that your background in theater like has informed your writing?
Yeah, definitely.
You studied theater, didn't
you? Yeah.
Was that in UCC?
In UCC as well. Like a lot of the, I suppose I love like the aesthetics of theater and dance and things like that and these like worlds and kind of, the kind of agreement to all just like sit down and engage in some sort of pretend thing for a little while is like so interesting to me. And then like, you know, the story in The Pig's Back, the girl is an actor. And I think I'm interested in like art and how people like engage with the role of art in their lives is like not always almost like this kind of quest or something. Whether it's like acting or like visual art, like there's a, I also have a story about someone who's an artist's assistant and like the different ways that people kind of can interact with art and being an artist without necessarily being the primary maker or something. Which like theater is so collaborative. So I think it's,
That's the difference, I think, because I had a similar, I did theater, I did a master's, and I think it's going from I'm taking some of this responsibility to I'm taking all the responsibility, which is sometimes exciting because you get to make all the decisions, but then it's like frightening in its own way.
Yeah. And I think I love theater and I love the like feeling of making something and being like, oh, this is only coming about because of the specific combination of like people in the room and all of our like ideas and intentions kind of mingling together. And then I can also find that so frustrating. And then I think that's like why I like writing myself as well, like having that autonomy as well, like I can just do whatever I want,
full control and like full budget,
because
if you work in any kind of like play or whatever, you're immediately constrained by like several other people and what you can actually afford.
Exactly. And even like sitting down to write and being like, well, I'll never be able to afford a cast of seven people, you know?
Yeah,
it's like better write a two-hander.
Like, things moving. Like I do, like when I think about like playwriting and I want to do something very simple, I feel like I do like go back to basics, like the playwriting like basics.
Yeah.
And I feel like your dialogue is very good and natural. And I feel like it arises from that in some ways, from like listening to or reading scripts. You know?
Yeah, definitely. It's so funny because I find writing plays very hard.
Very, very hard.
Difficult. Like I'm like a little bit of dialogue in a story where you can like set it up all the way you want and then just like have these little like quippy bits. It's like, cool, perfect. That's so easy. And then trying to do a whole script of like all external stuff.
Yeah.
Is like, yeah, I don't understand how people do it.
I know. It's like, it's really, when you see a bad play, it's terrible.
Yeah.
But when you see a great play, it's like really transcendent.
Yeah. And then there's also like all the other things like that you can take into account that are happening on the stage or that could be happening on the stage that aren't just what they're speaking. It's like, maybe I can't wrap my head around all the different moving parts all the time.
Were any of your plays staged or any of your readings?
I did like an, one of my best friends is a theater director, so she like read the story in The Pig's Back and was like, we should put this on. So we did like a play version of that. It was like, I adapted it with her, so there was like kind of extra stuff that's not in the story. And then she also does like a lot of video work, so there was like projections and stuff.
Oh, that's fun.
So we had it in like the Cork Midsummer Festival and Dublin Fringe Festival. So it was, it was a lot of fun, but it was, I also found it hard to like let go. I was like, I feel like, it was a really fun experience, like working with her. But yeah, I think because you have that feeling as just the writer where you can, like you said, it's yours and you have full control over it. I don't think I knew what I was doing when I was like, yes, we'll make this together, you know, like sharing it with you, you know. But yeah, I'm trying to write plays and stuff as well, kind of all the time. But yeah, I haven't hacked it yet. I'm getting there.
I feel like the other thing about playwriting that I forget or is that like theater is like a visual medium?
Yeah.
So you can have people up there like saying, not in the same way as like short stories, but like beautiful lines, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, like something else has to be happening.
And I did like a development week in Cork last week for like a theater piece that I'm trying to write. And everyone, two people were like, oh, it's like Emer McBride, Girls That Have Form thing. And I was like, oh, cool. So my playwriting is like the novelist. Like, beautiful compliment. Great compliment. I'll take it. Thank you so much. But yeah.
That novel works well as a play.
Yeah, it worked really well. Yeah.
That made like a lot of, I guess because it's so visceral.
And it's sort of like so disembodied or something that then it does something so interesting to have it with like a person performing this like sort of, detached voice. In like the, in a physical space.
Would you ever write another, like a full length play?
Yes, maybe. Trying. Yeah, I think so.
That'd be interesting. And are you working on more stories? Are you working towards a collection?
Yeah, I am. Like, I'm kind of writing stories all the time. And like, I suppose I'm always like, I'm writing a collection, but I'm just kind of trying to write as many stories as I can and then eventually put them together. And because I feel like, which is a very positive thing, I feel like every time, or the newer stories I write, I'm like, oh, these are better. So then the stories I've written previously, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll forget about those ones.
Have you revisited the ones from your MA? Or
Some of them, but some of them I find hard to reread and I'm like, oh, she's so young. She knows nothing. But probably could, rescue some of them.
And the idea of like performance, you mentioned that story that you have in The Pig's Back. And in this one too, like it seems to reoccur.
Yeah.
And like, I think I feel like I think similarly in some ways when you like study something like theater, everything becomes a performance.
Yes, everything. Yeah.
Like you start to see life as just like this, like every role.
Yeah.
Is like this kind of big performance. And I see it in the story where the father is like, he's refusing to like play his role.
Yeah.
And then like, she's kind of refusing to play hers for once. And by the end, like that's sort of liberating.
Yeah. I think all of that and like how, you just like see people's relationships. And I think when you're like writing something, you're obviously like outside of it. And you're aware of all the like miscommunications or whatever that's going on. But it is like everyone's trying to like perform a version of themselves or like meet the version that the person beside them wants them to be, or, you know, and it's like performing an identity is just so like complicated or something, you know? It's like you think you're doing one specific thing and then as an external viewer, you can see that it's something totally different.
But it's required of all of us. Did you do like many acting classes? Like, did you have to do actual acting in your course?
A lot of my course was like more kind of like studying plays and practitioners and stuff. So we didn't do a lot of acting, but I think a lot like in our early, like the first few semesters, I think a lot of people had been there being like, I want to be an actor.
Yeah.
So we really like clung to the few little like acting modules we had. I think it's interesting then the way people get into character and all that and like think about that in then of writing or like making characters. And a lot of it's like very similar. Like a lot of acting exercises are like world building and like detail building and finding the textures of a place and, you know, and it's very like transferable in a way.
And if you think of like, I remember when I was starting, because I found writing such like a daunting thing that I would be like, okay, it's just like an acting exercise or it's just like an improv. Like, just try and enjoy it. If something goes wrong, it goes wrong. But like, make something happen like very quickly. And I think that like, I feel like all those things that I learned, which, you know, were terribly embarrassing.
Yeah.
If I think back on any of that, it does make me want to die.
I have like a little pool of cringe inside me that is easily accessible at any moment.
Yeah.
It's all there.
But it was also incredibly useful because it made you sort of unembarrassable.
Yeah. I think of myself as like quite a hard person to feel embarrassed because I'm like, yeah. Well, I study theater, so you can't embarrass me.
I felt embarrassed for several years.
You're like, I lived in a state of embarrassment and now I'm free.
Now I am finally free.
Yeah.
I remember we played this one exercise. It's actually one that stuck with me for a long time. And we all, there was like a group of us and you entered the party as it was a party.
Mm-hmm.
And we all had a number. And you either went into the party as like a high status person or a low status person.
Yeah.
And how everyone reacted to you and treated you when this like random number was like conferred on you.
Yeah.
I remember there was a couple of exercises like that that were like,
yeah, I think we did some, I don't know if it was a party, but I remember doing high status, low status kind of dynamics building between people. And yeah.
It's so interesting. And it also then like, it makes everything seem fake.
Yeah. I remember as well, I can't remember which like, whose like method it is or whatever, but where you just like repeat back to each other what, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, your hair is blue. Your hair is blue. And then people start crying and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
It's like emotion becomes this totally manufactured thing, even though it's like feels genuine and you're like, okay, what is sincerity? Like what is going on here, you know?
Yeah. I remember I really like not struggled or when I left college, I just was like, and I've talked about this before, but when you were then expected to go like be a serious person and go into these jobs and like wear whatever, I just be like, this all just feels ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
Like wear this costume and like.
100%. I think about that all the time because sometimes I have like weird little fantasies about being someone who goes into an office and gets to wear a shirt every day, but it is like a performance thing.
You can just wear a shirt. Yeah. You don't have to go to the
I'm like, those people get dressed up and put on their costume every day and they're told what to do and it's like, they have a script to follow. So it's like, yeah, the thing of like studying theater. So I'm like seeing people in offices. I'm like, they're playing their roles. Yeah. They've learned their lines.
And it's so nice to play around.
Yeah.
It's so, I think that like, in theater, you learn that too, that it's like if you're given something, and like it's just within a certain like boundaries.
Yeah.
It's so easy.
You know the rules of this world, you know?
Yeah. I did find that, that's the other thing that I found useful in theater when I left, so that like all those kind of games of like imagination or whatever that I was playing when my friends were starting to become doctors, they made it so easy to write because I was like, well, it is an office of a, I say it's an office, you know. I didn't feel any boundary between me and that at all.
Like. Yeah, absolutely. I think you get like it's quite liberating to be told like, yeah, just like make something up and engage in it, and everyone else here in this room is going to believe you for a little while. You know?
Yeah. I think what I was saying is we really miss it.
Yeah. Need some improv going here.
I actually remember being somewhere and we were talking, one of my friends was talking about like some like club night or something she used to go to. And I was like, I think I went to an improv group in that room. And then I was like, oh God.
Like, no, not embarrassed.
Like, can't embarrass me.
Can't embarrass me.
So tell me a little bit more about some of your writing inspirations.
Who are my writing inspirations? I think when I need like a little like, when I feel like, oh, I really need like a quick like shot of good, like get me in the mood writing. I love like reading like Mary Gateskill or Atessa Moshfegh as well. I find like her, Atessa Moshfegh's like characters are so like immediate for me or something.
Yeah.
And she uses like humor and darkness really well in like a kind of like push and pull between them that I really, really enjoy. And Mary Gateskill I find like just very, inspiring as well.
She's so wonderful.
Yeah.
I could see like some Mary Gateskill in the story. Yeah, and that sort of like restlessness that the characters don't ever let you kind of get a hold on like who they are. Mm-hmm. Like they're constantly changing like people do. She really does that very, very well.
Yeah, and I feel like her characters, that restless is a really good word. They're like always moving around and like they're kind of slippery or something. You can't quite like catch on to them.
Yeah. She has some really great stories. Bad Behavior.
Yeah, I love that one. And what's the, Because They Wanted To, that collection as well.
I really, really like.
She is someone you read. I think I read her when I left college as well.
Yeah.
And I was also spending a lot of time on my own.
Mm.
And I read her and I felt like immediately, this must be like a one scary thing about being a writer, but immediately very close to her.
Yeah.
That sort of intimacy that I was like, I think I know her.
Yeah. And I like, normally I wouldn't really care about meeting a writer or anything, but when she came, she spoke at the like Dublin Literary Festival and I was like, I need her to sign my books. And she was like, for Rosa. And she was like, I was like, not just two, it's for me.
Oh, that's
so
lovely.
Yeah, we're intimately connected in my head.
Have you read Veronica?
Yes. Yeah.
My favorite of hers.
So good.
And any others?
I recently read Hurricane Season by Fernanda Melchor. I don't know if that's how you say it, but I feel like that was the first time in a while where I was like, I've been categorically blown away by this book. Like,
and it's a really great book.
It's so amazing. Yeah. And just like the like rush of the language in it is so like amazing. And I think I went through a phase of like not being able to read anything very violent or graphic because I think, I mean, sometimes it can be horrible.
Yeah.
But I think when I was a bit younger, I used to like gobble all that up because I thought it was like, I don't know, informing my view of the world, or I was like trying to learn about things. And then I was like, actually, I need to like protect myself and not read it. But I found this book just to be like, I was so sucked in, and the like all the characters and the world and like the way it starts with like the witch's death or whatever is like so evocative. And yeah, the like sentences and the movement through time in it is really interesting. Like, I remember there's one bit where they're like talking in like the present, and then it like moves forward in just like the same sentence of like someone in a courtroom speaking some testimony about what has happened and like back again. And I was like reading the sentence like three times, being like, oh, how did she do that?
Mm. She's brilliant, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
She has another novel, Paradise.
Yeah, I just got it out of the library, so.
That's really,
next
really violent.
Okay, yeah.
But the violence is like, I don't know. I feel that it's the same in Mary Gates Gill's work. It's like, well, obviously it's on the surface.
Yeah.
But there's like a violence to both their works, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know what makes it, I don't want to say palatable, because it's not that it is, but there's something in Mary Gates Gill and this book, like you're saying, that's like, it feels, it's like the world that these people are living in. It's part of it. So it's not just like a graphic description of violence for the sake of it. It's like showing how it informs the people and how they're existing in their relationships and their worlds.
Yeah, yeah. What's Fernanda Melchor's book called again?
Hurricane Season.
Hurricane Season.
Yeah.
Really felt to me like a book about real life. Like it felt real to me.
Yeah, all the people are so real. And
yeah.
I love the like net of characters, how they're all connected by like their relationships to the place and the violence within it, and like how that kind of distorts how they can interact with each other, or like kind of brings them together as well. Like there's a lot of the kind of like horrible kind of like masculinity issues and like sort of everyone trying to be really macho, and how that like really distorts and damages the people that are operating that within that, as much as, you know, the people who are being murdered and killed, you know?
Like, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And any other writing inspirations you can think of?
I'm currently reading Valencia by Michelle T. It's just been like republished by, is it Serpentsdale? Is that the publisher? And it's like, I picked it up because like Maggie Nelson wrote the foreword and I was like, oh, cool, I'll give this a go. And it's all about like queer scene in San Francisco, I think. And it's like very much like one of those books that's like about a group and they're all going out all the time and just all their like relationships and dating and partying. And it's like a lot of fun and it's like so funny. So I feel like it's making me really want to write like something about partying or, you know, like fun night out things, because it can be so, I think it really, to me, seems hard to write that because it's obviously such a like Russian blur and group.
It's hard
and,
to write a party.
Yeah.
It's hard to write a group and it's hard to write
yeah,
a party.
But I'm reading this and it's so funny. I'm like, oh, I'm going to like store this in here and try to write something similar.
Yeah, yeah. I look forward to reading it. Mm-hmm. And was there any other piece in the issue that you really enjoyed?
I really enjoyed the Getting the Fruit, Aisin Fagan's piece. Yeah.
Aisin's been on the pod.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I read it twice. And I think the first time, it took me a while to like land into it because I didn't know what was happening exactly. Mm-hmm. But I really liked that feeling because I was like going along with it. But the way they were speaking to each other, because you like figure out it's like, you know, they don't have perfect English or they're interacting in this way. And the movement of this person like running through the city, I was like just kind of like willing to go along with it. And the kind of strangeness of it all, I really enjoyed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she's great. His new book is fantastic, Eden Shore. If you haven't read it.
I haven't read it yet, but I'll put it second on the list under Paradise.
Yes. Thank you so much, Rosa. That was fantastic. Thank you for reading for us. And
thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Cheers. Thank you for listening to the Stinging Fly podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it. Or if you're new to the podcast, please subscribe. You can support the work we do by taking out a subscription to the Stinging Fly magazine or by becoming a friend of the fly. Information, all our workshops, events, and publications can be found on stingingfly.org. The Stinging Fly podcast is hosted by me, Nicole Flattery, produced by Owen Rogers, and edited by Ian Mullaney. Thanks to the Arts Council who provide funding for this podcast and for everything else that the Stinging Fly is doing to seek out, nurture, publish, and promote the very best new writers and new writing. We'll be back next month. Thanks again for listening.